How did the United States use their soft power to assert the culture in Europe? Like, kind of like fill the holes of the market and kind of just impose culture? Mm-hmm. You probably already answered it.
Yeah, no, I think that's the question in many ways, yeah. Right? Which is how, it's like we know the end point, but the sort of mechanisms of getting there, I think, are quite interesting. I think part of it has to do with a sort of, you know, top-down lobbying, you know, trying to get the ear of people in the U.S. government who then have some authority over in Europe. I think part of it has to do with this kind of bottom-up marketing, thinking about, you know, this is what Coke is like here. Here's how we would market it to a sort of national American population, but how's that going to differ in France, in Italy, in Germany? Can we, you know, are there common appeals we can make across countries? Do they need to be specific to these nations? So I think they're quite good at understanding and researching their markets and trying to figure out what's going to work best in these cases. I think part of it just has to do with some of the work in like economics talks about the first mover benefits, right? So being the first like mega soft drink producer, being a company like Chevrolet that has this massive economy of scale, or a company like Ford that, you know, is producing so much globally, and when you insert that into a situation where, you know, your European producers like, you know, Citroën in France or Fiat in Italy, or, you know, the various German producers, Mercedes, had not been competitive in terms of quantity with the United States before the war, and then after the war are totally dismembered. I mean, they're destroyed infrastructurally, their supply chains are gone, you know, many of the workers have died in the fighting, and there's just so many challenges that American producers are able to sort of move in and fill this void. And I think this is something that this process of reconstruction undertaken under military administration in a place like Germany, and the sort of help that the United States is giving to places like France, for example, it's already starting to raise some hackles by 1947, 1948, because it does feel like hard imperialism. It feels like, you know, they're U.S. troops in the streets, and there are U.S. products in the stores, and, you know, we're still rationing, and we're barely getting by. There's the housing stock isn't there, so I think there is this real sense that you know, the United States has certainly not caused the damage, but has taken advantage of you know, this context, and that they're inserting themselves both politically, militarily, but also sort of economically and culturally into this void that's developed. So I think this is where part of that void is just sort of natural. If people are going to purchase some of these basic products, like, they're going to be American products in 1947 or 1949, and the way that the U.S. tries to navigate this issue of getting local, you know, national producers, Volkswagen, for example, producing cars while also maintaining the sort of openness of the market for American products, I think that's in many ways sort of the gamble of the Marshall Plan in many ways, which is if we can give these loans or these grants, which are not to be paid back, and we can sort of get these economies back on their feet, and we can pry them open in some ways, and we'll assume that once the system gets going again, that the pie will grow, right? That the American share of the pie isn't going to be lost at the expense of growth in French or German production, but that the pie is going to grow, and thus the German producers and the American producers will both benefit from that. I think in many ways that's the gamble, and it's also quite successful that they're able to do this, saying that we're going to inject money and get those economies back on their feet so that the pie is larger, and thus we're going to have, again, that kind of first mover advantage, right? We'll have we'll be the recognizable name, we'll gain the trust of people, we'll show that, you know, this is where the connection between American business and American government, I think, is really key, because the government is certainly invested in creating stable, prosperous allies. But so many of the terms of the Marshall Plan have to do with, you know, economic openness, economic cooperation, economic planning that ultimately sort of redound to the benefit of this global capitalist power, right? That that the Europe they're helping to rebuild is quite amenable to American business and American culture because of the way that it's rebuilt. So I think, I mean, there's this kind of chicken and egg thing. Like, did the Americans engineer and manufacture this situation, or did the situation develop organically that the American sort of cultural imperialism, cultural power came into fill? And I think it's probably both. I might think of it as sort of co-evolving.